Touch number 9202, Rob.
Mr. Ray, Reel 9. You were telling me about how the harbour's boom and defences were organised at Medros.
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you, we had quite an experience once. There used to be a dog watch. A man used to come on at 4 o'clock in the morning to 6, or 4 o'clock to 8, I wouldn't be sure. Now this gun, it was always loaded, ready for action. And as I've said, that then there were, I can't recall whether it was a 4.5 or a 5.4, but it was an American gun. And this chappie, he came and he got onto the firing step of this gun, and it was all pointing out to sea, and he pulled the lever and fired the gun. And off it. Well, talk about pandemonium. What did it? The shell went right out to the horizon and just cleared the top of a destroyer that was on scouting duties. And they couldn't understand, naturally, they couldn't understand what had happened. And the next thing, they came in, and there was a court of inquiry about this lad. And the commander of this outfit, and one or two, and this man himself, and nothing really happened.
But did they find out why he'd pressed the lever? Why he'd fired the gun?
He pulled the lever because he's half asleep. You see, he didn't think that the gun was loaded. That was it. He must have been half asleep, or he must have been half doped or something. But anyway, that was what happened. But there was nothing seriously happened. There was nobody lost a ring or anything like that. The officer there, he had been out. He'd been out at some party or other, and the place was just in charge of any Tom, Dick or Harry. I mean, the Turks or the Germans could have come and taken the lot of them some way, excepting, of course. Well, it's just one of those things.
How did you have goes on this sentry duty? Did you go on this sentry duty?
Well, yes, I was, but no, it touched the gun.
How many of them would there be on sentry? Just one?
There was about half. There was about half a dozen of us on there, on that one place.
What were you actually looking for? Submarines or surface ships?
Well, submarines. Submarines, because there had been it was a natural harbour, and there had been all kinds of ships in there.
How could you tell if a submarine was approaching if it was underwater? Would you look for movement and the?
We couldn't really. We couldn't. We wouldn't know whether we were. I'll be perfectly frank. I think some of us wouldn't know whether we were going or coming back. Actually, the water was very clear there, though. Very clear. You could see it a good way down. And I don't imagine that there were many... there was much likelihood of the submarine trying to maneuver itself into the harbour there. Because it was only about the width of this room. A little bit more. A little more. Yes, a little more.
What, the gap in the boom?
The gap, yes.
Yeah, about 12 feet.
But then there's the this boom, you know.
What was the boom made up of?
Well, it was...
What did it look like?
Well, like huge vines, if you can imagine them strung along and right underneath the water, you know, well down, so that if anyone bumped it, you know, they'd go up.
So your job on Sentry,
well, we
you'd be on for how many hours? Four, did you say?
We're on that. Well, otherwise, actually, we were just there as numbers. That's all.
Did they ever see any?
No, we never. Not while I was there.
Where were you living?
Well, we were living on the spot. There's tents. There was living quarters there.
Was it tents or huts?
Well, it was building huts, yes. Huts.
But what about food and water and everything? Was all that? Was it comfortable?
We used to get that from the Navy. Used to come around there with all newspapers and everything in the morning. Not newspapers, the mail and everything. So we didn't have a... We had a cushy job, really.
Why were you not sent to rejoin your... battalion when you were discharged as Batman for this chap?
Yeah. Well, we were sent. Oh, no. I said. I don't know that this sergeant major. He said if I let him know. He would say that I went back. Oh, to my battalion, see the his. He's office number, you see. Well, then he must have changed his mind, and there were these two vacancies cropped up, and he said this chappy and Burton, B-U-R-D-O-N, Burton. He's a Durham lad, and he was the other chappy, and where he went to, well, we just separated and dropped out of touch, and that was that. But anyway, we went there, as I say, a couple of months or so, and then we cleared away from there.
Did you, this was after the evacuation, wasn't
it? Oh, yes, yes, yes.
What did you... did you want to rejoin your union, your unit, when they'd been evacuated? Or did you prefer the job?
I think that... I think you more or less looked on these things. Well, if it's... you sort of wanted to be some... doing something that was interesting, didn't you? That was more the line that I took. Right?
When did you eventually rejoin your unit then? How did that happen?
Well then. Now then, we packed up there. And...
Can you remember the date or the month?
Oh.
Approximately.
Well, let me say now. April, May. I think that June. Yeah. June 1916. Then we went... All those crowd from these three points were sort of collected, and we went off to Alexandria in Egypt to join Mauritania. The old Mauritania. And we loaded up there with all the men in the that were just stringing the lad in Egypt. Collected them all, took them aboard, and then we went from there to Malta, picked a few more up, and from Malta up to Marseille. There was about 250 men on the ship, and we got to Marseille, and the ship that we'd come over in was torpedoed on the next when she went out to harbour, Marseille. That would be June, because we had a couple of weeks in Marseille before they knew where the heck they were going to put us.
Was the Anson Battalion in France by then?
Oh yes, they were all in action then. By then, so anyway, we had about a fortnight in Marseille, and there were quite a few men belonged to the Australians and others who were hospital cases, you see. And when we left Marseille, there was a hospital train moved as well, and we set off. It took 57 hours to get from Marseille to Le Havre. At a stop, one of the many stops we made in France, there was a place named Orange. O-R-A-N-G-A. Orange, we call it Orange. The hospital train pulled up alongside our train. Now trust the Aussies for being quite away. In the hospital train, the Aussies, they left the train and came in amongst our people, which they were not supposed to do. They were supposed to go straight into hospital when they got nearer, you know, nearer the part of action. However, we went up to Le Havre, and by going to Le Havre, instead of going to ACAPS, going up to Le Havre, we all went over to the channel to fight. And as I say, when we from Le Havre over to Southampton, no one knew anything at all about us. Of course, we were getting into our own various units then, you see. Southampton. Well, Southampton wasn't very far from Blandford, comparatively speaking. You know, it was in Dorset. Blandford. And that's where our headquarters, depot, was. And eventually we got there. And because I'd been out east 18 months, I got to 8 days leave. Which I wouldn't call the king we were. So that was the summer, and I went up home. Had a lovely time. And when I came back,
how were you treated on leave? Were you the returning hero, or was it by then commonplace to have the soldiers home from leave? How did people?
Police, very happy, very entertainment, and you know, come to this one's house and the other one's house, and couldn't put a foot wrong. You know.
Did you try and tell him what was going on?
What the Flurry Ford used to sing, that song about don't rush in love, or we'll all be feeling blue. Soldiers like it rather, and the girls all like it too. That is the kind of thing. Anyway, I had a this month, so I went back to Blanford, and then from there out to France. And it was more coming there on to the end, closing of the year, you know, August, September and October, like that. And we were down in the Somme there.
The Somme?
The Somme, yeah. I said the Somme, didn't I? Anyway, the winter came and went.
What was your reception on rejoining the battalion? Did you recognise people? Were there still people you knew? And
yes, there were a few. It's a little bit... that's right. I'm wondering, because I changed to my battalion. I changed to the Hawk Battalion. And I'm wondering if that happened before 17 came in, or after. Anyway, I didn't have very... We didn't have a very good winter.
Were you in the front line?
Yeah.
How would you compare? Could you describe conditions in the Somme and the front line in the winter of 16?
The trenches were pretty a lot different. What had been in Gallipoli. They were more case hardened, you know. The ground was harder. Trenches were made like set pieces. You see, a trench would be blown up or smashed in here and there, but as a rule, there used to be, many of the trenches where the trenches had been taken from the Germans, they'd built themselves real dugouts with staircases in them, you know, and plenty of space down below for bunks and that kind of thing, for the Germans to indulge, but to live in that kind of atmosphere.
You use those dugouts when you're in captured German lines. Did you have similar dugouts when you were in British built lines?
No.
Would you have dugouts at all, or would it be?
Very few. There was one psychological reason for that. If you're living indoors, you're more prone, or you're less prone to face the world, aren't you? And I think that was why our people discountenanced anything about, you know, making any risk. Besides, we were not the people who were on the defence. It was the Germans who were on the defence. At least so we were given to understand. And that was the fact, wasn't it? They came so far and they settled themselves in there. Now it was up to us to get them out, and of course we were the ones who had to do the attacking, and it was no use us being in dugouts and what have you if we had to make any progress.
If you were living in the open mainly, how did the weather affect you? What was the winter like climate wise?
The climate was pretty, it was bad. Winter, terrible. We were motion, there was one night we were coming out the line, it was near to Albert as well, we were somewhere near Albert, and there was Inglepalmer and Lealvillers, and there were two places I remembered on the Somme. One of these Inglepalmer was a church, but anyway, from the field kitchens, we stopped and were supplied. We were given a feed of OFP soup, and it was as salty as could be. But after that, we wanted water. Couldn't get enough water, and we set off and we were marching along. And we stopped alongside a stream, and there we were, down on our knees, lapping up the water from the fresh stream, you know.
So there was, in fact, a lot of thirst at that time, was there? Lack of shortage of water?
No. It was just because of me having that, eating that, drinking that soup, you see, that was what gave us the thirst. That's what happened there.
What about, was it cold?
In the cold, while we were nailing, the ice was forming on our trousers, knees, on mine anyway.
What about mud? Was that a problem with the rain?
Oh, yes. Muck. Terrible. And of course we wore our coats, you know, the great coats. But, we used to, all things considered, it's hard to say it, but when you think back, we didn't do all that badly. For rations, you know. It was always a marvel to me that people like us, men, you know, you could get your rations. You didn't always get what you wanted, but you could get rations. If it wasn't fresh bread or that. Well, you could get biscuits, you know, and bully beef, and jam, and cheese, and that stuff. So, you only got a loaf of bread, mind you, a bun. You sometimes tossed up to who had it. Between two or three of you. And that would maybe last you a couple of days. But still, you got over all that stuff. Well, it used to be there, but in the trenches when it was snowing. Terrible.
Did it cause any related illnesses like trench feet or pneumonia?
Oh,
or
the first time, yes. That period, I got frostbitten feet. I got frostbite, and I was invalided at home. I came into to Bootleborough Hospital.
That was in the winter of 16, was it?
That was just after 16 and at the beginning of 17. See?
What were the symptoms of frostbite? What happened to your feet?
we were in a place where the Germans were bombarding us. And we, it was just like a barrage. We couldn't move. And we were there for 2 or 3 days. Nothing to, couldn't do anything. And there must have been a terrific amount of men lost. This is down on the Somme and the River Antigonot, there's a tributary. But around that particular area. Anyway, your feet were cold, and they used to give you whale oil to rub your feet with, rub into your feet. And it didn't seem to matter. Whale oil or no whale oil. And anyway, this mine started right in the centre, the bottom of the foot, you know, and gradually the feet get cold and cold and cold, and I didn't have any feeling at all in them. No feeling at all. And when things did sort of right themselves, and the doctors saw this kind of frostbite that he was dealing with, there were quite a number of people with frostbitten feet. And as I say, I was packed up. And I was pretty lucky that I didn't lose 2 or 3 toes, as black as could be. You could pull out the nail, and you wouldn't feel it. It was almost dead. Anyway, I got over that. That was it.
You were treated for it?
Yeah.
Liverpool.
Uh-huh.
Liverpool. How were you treated for it? Just
well, I don't know. I tell you, I couldn't really tell you what the. It was just. I couldn't say whether they gave hot fermentations or ointments or what. But they did do. Well, they fixed me up anyway.
Before we go on from there, this first period on the Western Front you'd had from sort of, the winter of 1617, how did the actual fighting strike you as different from Gallipoli? Things like artillery, machine guns.
Artillery. It's much more intensive. Much more. Much more. It was a different war altogether, yes. The one was just like a Sunday go to meeting, you know, the Gallipoli. The trouble with Gallipoli was that the conditions were against people doing anything. The weather, the climate, you see, was against it.
Were you actually scared under artillery bombardment? How did you feel under a heavy bombardment?
Oh, I was scared, yes, scared, sir, yes. Scared stiff.
What would you do?
Well, you just kept under cover as much as you could.
Would you use dugouts if they were available?
Yeah. Yes. Well, if you were in the front line, you weren't so bad, because the Germans, they were. If their artillery wouldn't want to fire too close to their own front line, in case their line was too close, you see, and they might hit their own people. Now, I've known the people in the front line. They've been all right, whilst the people further back have caught it worse than the nose in the front, you see.
Bombardments often, did you get them regularly?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, and what you see is fancy barrages, you know, creeping barrage, box barrage, and well, the artillery people had different names for, you know, and there was